It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance. And presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12. By Extreme Sight Performance Clinic, gain the competitive edge with vision performance. And by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And welcome to this edition of Youth Sports Now. My name is Greg Camp, and I am the lifelong Little Leaguer, the coach, and hopefully not referee when it comes to hosting the show. Got a great show on tap for you for this edition of Youth Sports Now, and a couple of ways you can join in and have some fun with us. First, please check out our website at youthsportsnowradio.com. On the website, there's all sorts of really cool stuff, including podcasts of the show, and physical therapy tips from Peak Performance's Mike Naparella, as well as blogs and you name it. We got it on that website. And, of course, follow us on Twitter and Facebook for Youth Sports Now Radio. On Twitter, it's Youth Sports Now 1. That's the number 1. And you can follow our daily tweets. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can contact us through the website or through our email address, which is direct at youthsportsnowradio@rochester.rr.com. So we hope to hear from you. We've had some really wonderful questions to Mike Naparella and myself for the past few weeks, and we've really enjoyed hearing from our listeners and getting those questions on everything related to youth sports. Remember, folks, our mission here is the well-being of our young athletes, and that goes for, you know, how we deal with them, how we work with them as coaches, parents, and how we interact with them and take care of them. And it's something we care very deeply about here at Youth Sports Now. I've got a wonderful show. It's not often that I am graced, I guess, with such fame is how I'm looking at it. With us today, I have, and I'll get to the introduction of them personally momentarily, but with me, I have some wonderful folks from the Rochester Fencing Club. You know, if you remember, we promised when we started this show that we were certainly going to be talking about the traditional sports that you always hear about, your baseball, football, soccer, hockey. And, you know, we've gone into some issues on field hockey and some other sports. But now we're talking about fencing. And the Rochester Fencing Club is located in Rochester. And with me today is the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club. I have Felicia Zimmerman, who is in studio with me. And on the Youth Sports Now hotline is her sister, Iris. And we're going to be talking with both of them in regards to some wonderful things about fencing. But let me give you some background information first. The Rochester Fencing Club has an unbelievable record of competitive achievement, and it includes national, collegiate, world, and Olympic champions, and also some people who have just done wonderful things and just enjoyed the sport of fencing. The Rochester Fencing Club has qualified 5 members to the 1996 Olympics, 4 to the 2000 Olympics, 1 to the 2008 Olympics, and has produced world champions. And it's just a wonderful thing that's located right here in Rochester that a lot of people just don't know about. And with us, you know, we have, I'm going to speak with Felicia first. Felicia, you were on 2 Olympic teams in 1996 and in 2000. So first of all, I'm graced by your presence that you're an Olympian. But then add the fact that you and your sister are the first sisters to be introduced into the U.S. Fencing Hall of Fame. I'm humbled by this. So welcome to Youth Sports Now.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, I don't think much about it because it was such a big part of my life. But, you know, every once in a while I get to reflect on it because it is and was such a unique thing to be an Olympian. And having that, you know, honor after working so hard for it. It's the ideals of Olympism that I like to bring to the fencing club and have in my life.
Okay, fencing. Talk to me about fencing. The, you know, everybody thinks it's sword fighting, and we see the pirates and the buccaneers and this swashbuckling, you know, fights. But yet, you know, fencing is, I've looked at it as fencing is also graceful, it's athletic, and it certainly provides great hand-eye coordination. And, you know, we were talking off air that it's a great workout besides. So tell me a little bit about fencing and tell me how you and your sister got into it.
Fencing is, you know, a martial art in a way. You know, you have a sword in your hand. You are on a strip, and it is swashbuckling, but it isn't swashbuckling because it is the sport, the Olympic sport of fencing. You are confined into a strip, what we call a piste, and you fence in that area. And it came from fencing within the castle walls. So basically, I started when I was 8 years old. My dad read a newspaper article about fencing in the local DNC. My parents had me doing all these other sports, swimming, diving, gymnastics, and I loved it. But, you know, to be honest, you know, I would try anything, I think, except for fencing. My dad saw the newspaper article, thought, you know, I'm, you know, too shy, so she needs to be able to defend herself. So I went kicking and screaming to this fencing class, and I took the first fencing class. I was around all these other kids, and for some reason, it stuck with me. It called to me. So fencing picked me as a sport, and I just kept going and going and eventually made the Olympic team.
You know, that's wonderful. It's just an amazing sport to me. And you know, we always try on Youth Sports Now to bring information like this to our listeners. And on the Youth Sports Now hotline, I have Iris Zimmerman. And Iris, you are also involved and, again, an Olympian as well. So I'm honored to have you on the show and as part of also being inducted into the Hall of Fame with your sister. So welcome to Youth Sports Now.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm a little late.
No problem. What is it about fencing for you? Your sister was telling us that, you know, she started and that you were watching, and I heard the story. She probably embarrasses you a little bit with the story of, you know, waiting until you were six to start fencing and you were ready to go. But what was it about fencing that attracted you?
Well, besides the fact that I wanted to beat my sister, so I loved it because it was an individual sport. I took to it right away. I was terrible at swimming. I was terrible at gymnastics. I was kind of this big kid, kind of stocky kid, and I was pretty bad at a lot of different sports. And I felt like fencing was one of the only sports that when I did it, I picked up the weapon, it came easily.
And Felicia, when you started, we were, again, talking off air, you did do other sports.
I did.
You tried other types of sporting events.
I did, and I loved gymnastics, and I loved swimming, and I loved diving. And actually, I still followed gymnastics while I was doing more fencing. I just realized when I was in gymnastics class, you know, I wasn't able to do the double flips and the backward, you know, these activities. And I also knew that I was getting taller, and I wasn't going to be one of those, you know, standing on the beam, you know, for the national championships. And for fencing just took to me. It was just the way that you get to fence different people. I got to fence boys, girls, people of all ages, of all levels. So for me, it was really fun to encounter so many different people.
And, you know, for sports today, you know, many kids are looking for different sports or alternative sports that is, you know, different from the lacrosse or the soccer or the baseball. And fencing certainly offers that. How do you, you know, work with the kids, and what's the coaching philosophy that you guys use, you know, at the Rochester Fencing Club?
I think Iris would be best suited to answer this.
Iris, what do you think?
Wow. So a lot of people think, and I've heard this a lot, of, oh, well, my kid's never going to be an Olympian. Well, I know they're not going to all be Olympians. You know, there are only a few people that are going to do that. So we want to make sure that whoever walks through the door gets a great education about the sport, and they learn about the sport and they learn about themselves. So our philosophy at the Fencing Club is really about the people first and the sport second.
And how important is this for the young kids? We were talking with your sister about, you know, dealing with stresses and teaching life skills. I'll ask you first, Iris, you know, about that, and then Felicia, jump in here on how it helps the kids with life skills, not just, you know, the physical athleticism of it.
Well, first of all, you know, when the kids are at school, everybody wins. Everyone gets an award. And this is the one place, and it's a safe place for the kids because we know them well, that they're able to fail, and they're able to learn from those quote-unquote failures. Not everyone's going to win an award. So I think it's just a place for them to feel safe, to know that they can lose and still learn and still move forward.
And Felicia, what about the stresses? What, you know, when kids are learning life skills in any sport, there's a stress, but there's also stress from parents. There's stress from schoolwork. There's stress from, unfortunately, all the computer games and the stress on their thumbs from iPhones and iPads. So right. how do you work with them, teach them, and have them deal with stress?
Well, we do. We actually have a pretty good, solid program that we have in place where we do set expectations. For example, we're starting our new season. Everybody on our competitive team has a goal-setting sheet, and we set macro goals, we set micro goals, and we also set goals for practice. And it's all about the process because the outcome will come there. But it's all, and it's very individualized and tailored. You know, we're not expecting, like she said, everyone to walk in the door to be an Olympian, but we do have an expectation. We want to help you set a bar. And it's about being able to work very hard, to go to the competitions. And when she says fail, what we mean is you set the expectation, you put it out there and you say, you know, I'm going to try to make the top four this time. And let's say you make sixth, but the result is doesn't reflect on the process that made you get there. And you learn from that. And it's all about testing your skill, coming back, trying again, and going back out. I mean, the best quote I've ever held on to was, you know, very Zen Buddhist, is the result of a bullseye is from 1,000 misses. You know, I didn't get to be an Olympian because I won everything. I didn't do well in a lot of things, but it was the accumulation. We look at fencing as a journey and a marathon, not a sprint. So, and we want to be able to impart a lot of this, you know, life skills that takes you to colleges. We have a lot of kids that go to Division I colleges and become captains of their team because they know how to handle the workload from school, the pressure from the parents. But we really try to, you know, disengage from that and give it their own identity and their autonomy for themselves to say, I'm making this choice. I'm committing to this program. I'm going to, you know, work hard for this, but it's all on their own. It has to be driven from themselves.
We are speaking with the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club, in obviously here in Rochester. We have with us Felicia Zimmerman and her sister Iris Zimmerman, who are the owners, but they're also Olympians, and they are the only two sisters to be inducted into the U.S. Fencing Hall of Fame. You know, before we take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the definitions and how the kids can contact you and get into fencing, but I've got to ask the question, you know, how did you make the Olympic team and how cool was it to be an Olympian?
So I'll answer it first. So being an Olympian is a huge, huge highlight. I mean, I almost always get teary when I think about it because I got to walk in the opening ceremonies with my sister. And I used to watch the Olympics on TV, and they never showed fencing. They showed swimming, they showed diving, they showed gymnastics, track and field. And it was very inspirational to me. I mean, the stories of these girls, women just working really hard and sacrificing a lot. And I just knew, you know, I got to try. So it took a lot of hours. I mean, you have to be quite committed if you're going to go down that route. I mean, I did, before school, I was out at the pool working out. In my breaks at lunch, I would go back to the fencing club, take a lesson. After school, I would go to the back to the fencing club, eat a snack, do my homework there, take another lesson, and then fence at practice, then go home, finish my homework. I mean, it was just nonstop. You sacrificed a lot, but there was so much upside. I got to travel the world. I got to go to World Cups. I was able to go to all these exotic places, meet all these different people through the sport, and I felt very much like an ambassador of the United States and not just my sport.
And Iris, why did you like the Olympics, aside from the fact that, you know, you were in competition with your sister, but you went to the Olympics with her? What was that experience like for you, and why did you want to be on the team?
Well, I think it helps to have a sister that's in it before you. I think you're always like, what can I do, and what can I do better than her? You know, I really enjoyed the experience. I was only 19 when I went. So for me, I think the youth of it, I approached it as another tournament and another step. So I was like, okay, World Championships next year, the Olympics. And I always put my head down and just worked. I was always a hard worker. And that for me was just another step in my career in fencing.
We are speaking with Felicia and Ira Zimmerman, the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club, Olympians, and Hall of Fame members at the U.S. Fencing Hall of Fame. And when we come back, I just might say to you, en garde, and we might talk about foil and epee and sabers and all sorts of good stuff and why kids may want to get into fencing. We'll be back.
Your Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM 1040 AM. Get the podcast or the live stream at WYSL1040.com. I don't know address to places like Abbey
Road, take friends tonight, not tense to whatever we want. Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Coaching tips, practice planning, safety and conditioning, and everything in between. The Little League Coach Resource Center. Go to littleleaguecoach.org for more information.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
The Youth Sports Now studios are just graced with the presence of the Olympic members and the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club and Hall of Famers at the U.S. Fencing Hall of Fame. With us is Felicia and Ira Zimmerman, sisters, who have a real good sister act going with fencing and then all their wonderful experiences. Okay, I've got to ask you guys, what does en garde mean? I always watch this in the movies, and I see the hand go back, and I see the saber or the sword go out, and they say, en garde. Somebody tell me what it means.
Greg, so fencing originated pretty much in France. So the official language of fencing is French. So en garde, you know, E-N-G-A-R-D-E is really on guard, be ready. So there are lines on your field of play where you start at, on your en garde line. So you have your back arm up because you can't have your non-weapon hand. It's not a two-handed weapon. It's a one-handed weapon. You can't have your non-armed hand in front of you because that's covering the target. It must be away from your target area, and then you have the sword in your hand pointing at your opponent.
Interesting. Okay, so it will be, when I begin a show, I need to be, say on guard.
That's
to be ready.
Always ready
for the show. Hey, Iris, you know, I've looked at some of the stuff that that you do at the Rochester Fencing Club. Tell me about what you specifically coach and what your specialty is, and maybe give the parents and the kids a little bit of a definition for us.
Oh, great! So I do a lot of. I actually do a lot of beginner and outreach classes, and it's interesting because a lot of people are like, well, you're the Olympian, you should give the competitive kids advice, and I do. I have relationships with the competitive kids, but I really, really love teaching beginners because what I see in them is what I love about the sport. They come in, and they're just so excited. So I really teach a lot of the beginners. I do consult and help the competitive-level kids. But I try with Felicia to make sure our club is inclusive for kids who want to compete, for kids who want to do the sport, kids who and adults also who want to do recreational fencing as well. So I'm trying to pull that all together. Not always so easy.
And you know, Felicia, tell me a little bit about. I've looked on your website, and I also tried to do my homework on fencing before the show today. We hear terms like foil and saber, and you corrected me, and no doubt you'll have to correct me again on épée. What do those things mean, and how do they relate to the sport?
So there are three weapons in fencing. These are three weapon styles. The first one I'll say is épée. You'll read that in crossword puzzles because it has three E's for the vowels. That was the original dueling weapon. Whoever, you know, got blood first, right, for the dueling wins. So there's really kind of a no holds bar in fencing in épée. Whoever hits wins, gets the point. If two people hit at the same time, both people get a point. Your whole entire body's a target. The next weapon is foil. It was designed as a practice weapon for épée. The target area is the chest, the side, and the back for the internal organs. And I guess your head was not considered internal. So it's just the chest, and it's a very much a precision weapon. You can only score in that area. The weapon is a little bit lighter. Finally, the saber comes from the cavalry sword where you're sitting on the horse. And if someone's coming after you, you want to kill the person at the horse. So the target area for the sport is everything above the horse. So everything above your hips, including the head and your arms. And you can hit with the edge, so sideways. So that's where you see the swashbuckling come in, where you can hit sideways, but also with the point. Foil and épée are precision weapons where you have to hit with the point. And that's how you score in those three weapons. And each one requires different types of training. We start everyone in foil. It's a good base, actually, to move into the other weapons. If you're older and you start, let's say you're 11, maybe 13, we'll usually start you in épée right away because the results, there's a lot more, it's easier to get better in épée quicker at that age than it is in foil or saber. But we are open to having you try all the different weapons to see what fits your personality. And we're also open to all the different levels. So we can coach you all the way to the Olympics if we have to. But we also provide recreational sport level fencing too.
So, Iris, we've talked, you know, we hear the phrase weapon and the saber and all that kind of good stuff. But ultimately, for the parents and for the kids who are thinking about this, this is just a wonderful sports opportunity for them to get into as a young athlete. Am I correct?
Yeah, and I think the difference is that it appeals to a certain kind of kid. It appeals to that kid who likes a thinking game, appeals to that kid that doesn't want to be in a team sport. I kind of say that we're all kind of those kids, those mismatched puzzle pieces that didn't fit into those other sports that found each other, and we're all kind of fitting together. And we all walk in through this door, and I will tell you that we found a community with each other. So it definitely takes a certain personality, a certain kid, even adult, you know, who really likes the strategy portion of the game, that really wants to just do something that's personal, individual, and not on a team.
So tell me a little bit more, Felicia, about the actual Rochester Fencing Club. I mean, you have a location, but I also know that you do some off-site trainings and so on. And then you've also got this wonderful experience with working with the kids, and it's become, you know, your business, your passion, but your life. So tell me more about the fencing club and how people can get their kids signed up.
So Rochester Fencing Club is in the city of Rochester across from East High School. We're next to the Restore building. We're really word of mouth. We've been there for actually at that particular location almost 20 years. And we're on the second floor of this white building. And we, like I said, teach kids of all ages. You can come to our website, rocfencing.com. You can look us up on Facebook as well, / ROC Fencing. And we post everything about, we have intro classes that we do at the fencing club. We have outreach kind of recreational classes that Iris and a lot of our coaches teach outside at various recreational programs. We run a great summer camp where you get to be introduced to the whole sport of fencing, you know, videos, games. It's a great way to introduce yourself to the sport of fencing. And usually our competitive, and then we take you into our beginners program after the intro class. And that's really kind of a pay as you drink type situation, because we know that kids have lots of different things that they like to do. So you're not fully committed to a competitive program. We ease you into that, and we also help you along with that process. But once you get into the competitive program, there's kind of a commitment to it. Our kids in the competitive program meet anywhere between 3 to 4 days a week. Anywhere between an hour and a half to 2 hours each time. And we also incorporate a lot of sports psychology skills, nutrition. We talk about strength and conditioning. So it's really a well-rounded program, because we're really looking, like Iris said, looking out for the individual. And we're really trying to build a solid fencer with great technical and tactical backgrounds, but also a leader. We're trying to also provide them soft skills that will help them, whether they know it or not, it's happening to them.
Iris, what would be in an ideal world, if you're speaking to the parents of the kids who might want to be with you guys at the Rochester Fencing Club, what's the best age? When should a young athlete start with you?
We start at 6 years old at the fencing club, but kids tend to make a commitment to the fencing club at about 8 or 10. That's really when they really start to pick up the skills. From about 6 to 8, they're still kind of playing around. They're still trying to figure out which sport they like, and we really ask them somewhere between 8 and 10, sometimes 10, now is the time to make a commitment to the sport if you really want to go somewhere with it.
And with the kids that, and I keep calling them kids, but I see that in 2013, you had 4 of the high school seniors were recruited to Division I fencing programs at Cornell and at Cleveland State University. I would imagine that the work that you do with them is clearly much more intense, but are those the types of kids that have evolved and come through the camp and that you've worked with, or are these kids who are coming to you just for the expertise because you guys are Olympians?
No, it's interesting. A lot of those kids that graduated last year came to us as teenagers. It's interesting because it was kind of an anomaly. We get a lot of more kids that are young, but they came to us at about 12 or 13. And actually, one of the kids that's at Cleveland State, he became the top Western New York saber fencer, and he is at Cleveland State, and he only was with us about 4 years, I believe. So it was very interesting how that happened.
Felicia, with the sport of and then the finesse of fencing, how do you view the interaction between you as a coach, you as an Olympian, and the kids? And then where do the parents fit in? It's obviously a little bit different than being a little league parent or a hockey parent, but you know, to me, it's a little more refined and a little more classy than moms and dads screaming from the sidelines at a baseball game or in a hockey arena. How do you manage the interaction with the kids and the interaction with the parents?
Don't let fencing fool you. We actually, what I'd like to say is that we're going to have a huge super youth circuit. When we say youth, our classification in fencing for youth is 14 years and under. It'll be in Gates Chilai the last weekend of October. It is the Ben Gutenberg Memorial Tournament in honor of one of our fencers, Ben Gutenberg, that had passed away in a car accident. So that we will be inundated with between 500 to 800 fencers from around the country. fencing for placements, points to get to the national their national championships. So parents will be on the side of the strip, unlike tennis, yelling, cheering for their athletes, for their kids. The coaches are there trying to give direction, trying to yell above the parents. Teammates are there cheering for their own students. So you have a lot of things happening all at the same time. So it isn't as refined as a lot of people think, but it's about we try to make sure that we are a group and we're a team. And when we help the competitive kids make decisions about which tournaments to go to, how we're going to run it, who's kind of in charge at the moment, the parents' role is to be the parent and supportive of their children, whether they're doing well or not doing well. And the coaches really are trying to coach the athlete through the fencing bout, through their training. And sometimes not bad things happen, but sometimes hard things happen. And it's important that the coach and the student make sure that they can work through it together with the parent being supportive. And we're not saying everything is a gold medal and we're not saying everything is sunshine, but it's important that they have someone to go to that's in their corner that supports them. But also be realistic about, you know, this one really, it was a tough bout and you lost it. And because you didn't come to practice over the last couple of weeks, there is a consequence to what you put in and what you get out.
We are speaking with Felicia and Ira Zimmerman, who are the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club. And it's just an absolutely, you know, unique sport, I think, for our young, and something that I think we're going to be keep following these Olympians and owners of the fencing club. You can contact them at Rochester, ROCFencing.com.
Right.
And that's a great place to get some information about fencing and when you can sign up for classes and trainings. And then also they are on Facebook and Twitter, so you can follow them there. And, you know, real quick, Iris, I got to ask, when you guys compete against each other, who wins?
Why do you have to ask that at the end?
Absolutely, because I've only got a minute left, so you got to tell me.
Well, I think it went back and forth for a while, but there was a period of time that I got to beat her, but she's pretty good. I hate to say it.
So, you're not so bad yourself.
So the two-time Olympian is pretty good. does Felicia let you know that she was at the Olympics twice?
Never. She's an amazing older sister who's always been really supportive, and I'm not just saying that on the radio. So I she's amazing, and if she's always supported me and never thrown anything like that in my face.
Felicia, as we wrap things up here, if you could, and you are, because you have the opportunity right now, to talk to the Rochester parents and to talk to the kids, what would you say to them about fencing and potentially coming to you for lessons, class, camps, and trainings?
Well, if nothing else, it's such a unique sport. We have five fantastic coaches at our club. We really have a full program. And just to try it, give it a try. I think it's such a unique sport. You're going to develop a lot of agility, speed, quickness, strength, conditioning through the sport, just like any other sport. But it's something unique. And if anything, just give it a try and see if you like it, even if it's just once.
Any desire for either one of you to go back to the Olympics? And how tough might it be for you to go back to the Olympics and make the team now?
I would love to go back. I think about it all the time, but now I have a little kid. This is Iris, and I have a little kid, and I found out I have arthritis in my hip, so I need a hip replacement. So maybe after the hip replacement.
I would love to go back, too. It was such a unique experience, but, you know, there's other life things that I want to do as well, and I want to be able to, you know, educate and inform and bring the sport of fencing to the community of Rochester, continue bringing it to the community of Rochester and exposing it. It's just about exposure and people giving it a try.
And what about as a coach? What about becoming the U.S. Olympic coach for fencing?
Wow. Iris?
You know, I don't have that desire. We have some really good coaches here that have that desire, but I really like being here in Rochester. I really like, we traveled so much almost every weekend, but I like making a difference here with the young kids, and I feel like I do that at the beginner level and being here and really being one-on-one with all the kids. And when you're an Olympic level coach, you're constantly traveling and moving and going, so it would take me away from what I really believe in.
I'm more of an administrator. I'd like to be able to help set. I used to sit on the board of directors for U.S. Fencing, and I like to bring, making sure that, you know, the policies around safe sport and getting the word out about the sport of fencing, how it's just another alternative. Like I said, I believe in healthy kids and healthy lifestyles. So the ability to provide another outlet for kids in the area and to provide them with great coaches and great training. You're going to learn a lot of life skills, and we're very, very supportive of like a tight-knit community.
Well, with that, we're going to wrap up this segment of Youth Sports Now. I can't thank the sister act team of Felicia and Iris Zimmerman, the owners of the Rochester Fencing Club. Absolutely. Check out their website at rockfencing.com. It's rocfencing.com. They're on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, just to be in the studio with you has been a pleasure. Thank you. Will you come back? Will
Absolutely.
You guys come back?
Absolutely.
And I'd like to hear more about the event you're having, and we'll definitely have you guys back on Youth Sports Now. Thanks.
Thank you.
Tell a friend or a teammate about Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM or 1040 AM. Put on a show.
Proudly conservative. WYSL. Rochester's home for America's morning show with Quinn and Rose. 92.1 FM and 1040 AM. WYSL, Avon, Rochester.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jim Andrews. I've worked closely with Little League to develop pitch count regulations. Our goal is to protect our youth baseball players from suffering arm injuries. Go to littleleague.org for more information.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance. Topics that support the well-being of your young athlete. Presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now with our regular segment sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. And, of course, our good friend Mike Naparella. Hey, Mike, how's it going today?
Excellent, Greg. How's it going with you?
Very well, thanks. And, you know, hey, we've been listening to some wonderful information about fencing. And you know, we're getting into the fall sports. We've got all the high school, college sports that are out there for the fall. And now we find out all this wonderful information about fencing, which, you know, we try and, as you know, try to have information about different kinds of sports. So let's start off with a little bit of fencing and overuse injuries or repetitive use injuries that could happen.
Absolutely. You know, first of all, I guess before we even start, I just want to say it's awesome having Iris and Felicia on the show. I know them both. You know, to have two kind-hearted, dedicated just awesome athletes who were Olympians who came from Rochester and are back here in our own backyard training people and caring about young athletes and trying to do it right. And they just have such high integrity. It's great having them on the show. It's great knowing them. But it's an awesome opportunity for local athletes who are into fencing to not just have coaches who care, but really successful, top, elite people like that working with them. So, you know, we're talking about elite athletes, and we're talking about fencing, and we're talking about the idea of overuse injuries. And I think it's a timely question. You know, we're talking fencing today, and that's a great example of a sport because of the repetitiveness where you do see some overuse injuries. And an overuse injury, you know, we think about that. An example I'll give, Greg, would be like that drop of water. It's falling off the cliff. It's landing on a rock. You look at that, and it doesn't look impressive. The stress on the rock is not impressive. It's just a drop of water. But if you wait hundreds of years or 1,000 years, you come back, and haven't we been hiking before, and you see that drop of water falling off the cliff, but you see that rock has been scooped out. The water did that over time. Another great example would be a car alignment. You know, if the alignment on your car is just a little bit off and you put new tires on the front axle, let's say, where your alignment's off, the tires look fine on day one, but by 3 months later, suddenly there's an uneven wear. You don't see it right away, but it develops over time. It's that little stress over time. And in a sport like fencing, you know, we might see things like a patellar tendonitis, the tendon where the kneecap attaches to the lower leg bone for your quad muscle. They're lunging forward repetitively as they advance and retreat in a sport like fencing. And so that area takes a lot of beating. The Achilles tendon can do the same. The rotator cuff and the shoulder blade muscles, those can be sources of overuse as they hold their weapon and they're advancing forward and moving that arm rapidly to try and get their points. So those would be examples of overuse injuries in a sport like fencing.
You know, Mike, we've talked about the rock and the water and how it creates that little, you know, divoter, if you will, into the rock as a good analogy for overuse injuries. But is it just the overuse and is it always just too much volume and too much overuse that you know, assists the injury in continuing?
Yeah, and I think you're right on target. There's a lot of different factors, but certainly, you know, when we just think overuse, the implication of the word right away is there's a lot of volume in there. And for a lot of athletes, I think that's totally, you know, what's going on. If you look at a sport like fencing, for example, and if that's the only sport you do, and you're repetitively going through that motion over and over thousands and thousands of times, in one way you can become very conditioned, well-conditioned, super-conditioned to perform those activities. But if you've got any weaknesses or stiffnesses or other issues going on, you may very well begin to wear away at certain areas. So another associated thing I'd say would be, you know, poor mechanics, poor technique. We've had various coaches on, like Iris and Felicia, or like Todd at Elite Performance, people who coach athletes in the skill of the game. You know, they're working hard to try and get people to do things right. Well, if you get a kid who hasn't been coached quite well enough in their technique, and they're still trying really hard but their technique's off, that could be their drop of water. You know, in our realm of things at Peak Performance, one of the things we look at all the time is biomechanics. If someone's got, let's say, feet that are very overpronated or hips that are very stiff, as they go about even proper technique, that area is going to take up more stress, and that can be another source. So there's many different reasons why kids can experience that overuse.
And, Mike, what happens with kids or maybe as young adults when they've been doing that one sport or they've been doing the constant overuse and have the overuse injuries, but then either A, the old injury wasn't addressed and it still persists at the foundation, or B, what if they try and do another sport? What happens because their bodies have become so conditioned to the one sport and the overuse?
Well, you know, I think we've talked a little bit on the show in the past, and I think it's worth bringing up again. There's a real challenge these days as young athletes and coaching gets more and more specialized. There's a stress on kids who really love a sport and aspire to maybe play in college to only play one sport year-round. And that can be a very difficult choice because to remain competitive, sometimes they feel like they need to do that, or maybe, in fact, they do need to do that at some point. But there, we believe there is some inherent value in multifaceted stimuli to the body, so that you're not always running in the same direction. You're not always jumping. You're not always throwing or hitting a ball exactly the same. you vary the stresses on the body so that it doesn't get overused. So I think even in that case where there may be an unresolved injury and an athlete decides they're going to go play another sport as well, that can be a good thing because it varies off of the overstress constancy that they might have been experiencing in their one sport or their primary sport. But as you said, if you have an old unresolved injury, it can be a real problem. I'll give you an example. I had an athlete recently, a young athlete who came in with a knee tendonitis, a patellar tendonitis, related to running and jumping and cutting and hard change of direction sport activities. Well, this young guy had actually sprained his ankle about 6 months beforehand. And in the past medical history, while I'm speaking to him, I'm asking him, has he had any other injuries? And he says, no. And after a while, in poking at things a bit more, it came out that, in fact, he did have an ankle sprain, but he felt like he was totally fine. He had recovered from it. And actually what we found is exactly the question that you bring up, is can an old injury contribute to the overuse? Well, in his case, it certainly did. When you stand and bend and squat down, we look at the angle that your lower leg makes over your foot. And let's say, for example, 25 to 30 degrees of an angle would be a good angle to have. Well, on his uninjured leg, he was able to get that sort of an angle. On the ankle sprain ankle, which he thought was resolved and fine and didn't give him pain anymore, he actually had about 15 or 18 degrees of motion. So he had a 30% or more deficit in motion in that ankle. So every time he would cut, every time he would change direction, every time he would squat down to jump, that ankle wasn't moving as well as it should, and so his heel would rise early or his leg would collapse in, and little by little, that was his drop of water. That was his car alignment being out of whack, stressing that knee tendon more and more and more. And it was never enough at one moment for him to hurt, but over the course of a few months, suddenly he develops a knee tendonitis, and he thought it just came on because something was being, quote-unquote, over-volumed in his sport. But again, Greg, we've talked about this before a little, but I think it's worth mentioning. When you have a pain on one side of your body, and we want to blame that on overuse, let's say he has a knee tendonitis, and let's say he was a soccer player. He wasn't, but let's give the example of soccer. Well, the other leg experienced the same soccer practices and games that the other leg did. How can we blame overuse for one side being painful, and yet the other side experienced exactly the same volume of activity, and it doesn't have overuse? So I think that's where it's really critical to do exactly what you said. We've got to understand, are there any old injuries? Are there any weaknesses or losses of motion that are really underlying this? Because it's not just always pure volume. There's oftentimes something else associated with that volume.
And Mike, you know, I know this to be true from some of the athletes that I've coached, and it'd be interesting to get your perspective on it. But, you know, so many times when an athlete is injured, the injury is what is treated. Yet I've heard that, you know, if somebody is hurt, and say, let's just call it a knee, that the knee injury can also affect the biomechanics of the overall body, or it could then create back problems or neck problems or shoulder problems. So it really is, you know, the old saying of, you know, every bone is connected and the ligaments are connected. That's kind of true.
Absolutely. And I think what you just gave is an awesome example. Let's talk about, you know, someone with a knee tendonitis, for example, in the altering mechanics that you're talking about. You know, I have people now who have shoulder problems, volleyball hitters. Well, if you've got a knee tendonitis, especially if it's only on one side, but even if it's on both, and I attempt to jump to get ready to go do my spike, but my knee is bothering me, so especially if it's only on one side, one knee may bend or load differently than the other, but even if both are painful, now I don't jump as well as I did before. Now I don't have the height I used to, and where I contact the ball in my swing, how rapidly, because I'm not in the air as long now, right? I can't jump as high because my knees hurt. So that knee tendonitis actually causes me to alter how I go about swinging at that volleyball. I may contact it at a different point. That may not be ideal for my rotator cuff. I am not getting up as high, so I'm trying to swing even faster because I've got to get to that ball before it comes back down below the net. So even a knee tendonitis ultimately could be a source of why, you know, a young female volleyball player or a young male volleyball player is beginning to have shoulder pains. Sometimes it's from their shoulder, their trunk. We've talked about some of those other connections. But sometimes it literally, as you've said, is so far away, it's actually the other half of their body.
You know, that just amazes me. And I guess the question that I think, you know, suddenly deserves asking, Mike, is whose responsibility and who can examine this stuff? I mean, is it the coach's responsibility to understand the biomechanics of this? Is it the physician? Or is it ultimately send them to you at Peak Performance and take a look at this?
Well, you know, Greg, I think that's a really good question because I think probably everybody plays some sort of a role. Certainly the higher you get up the chain in terms of education, being able to nitpick at those details becomes more and more, you know, our responsibility as physical therapists. Or we had Phil Steckley on from Western Rondacoit, our athletic trainer at school, a few weeks ago. Someone like Phil, you know, when you get to our level of training, we should be picking those things up. From a physician standpoint, I guess I would argue it's really not their primary role or need. We shouldn't be looking to them to problem solve all those things. Their main role is really to diagnose medically. Are we dealing with a fracture? Is it a tumor? Is it a tendonitis? And what would be a smart course of care for this injury? To get into the details of, well, hey, I think, Mary, you've got this shoulder tendonitis because you've got this old knee thing that's not resolved. That would be awfully astute of the doctor. But that's not really what their need is in the system. It's really to decide, hey, Mary, you've got a tendonitis versus you've got a labral tear versus you've got a bursitis, and how might we treat those differently? Once they get to us as physical therapists, for example, when someone comes to Peak Performance, we should be picking those things up. But from a parent's perspective, from a coach's perspective, I do believe that there is some responsibility there. And really the thing is to make sure that we're keeping a keen eye on that young athlete and saying, okay, Bobby, if you've sprained that ankle, I'm not just going to accept that you want to play, that you go back in. I'm not just going to accept that you're not limping terribly when you go back in. I want to know that you really look pretty good. The fact that you don't have pain and you have a heart for playing and you want to get back in is awesome, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're ready. And being ready should mean, hey, if you can hop around on the left leg really well, I want to see you hop around really well on the right leg as well. You know, so going between double-sided activities, just watching someone run, sometimes they can fake their way through it. A coach or a parent shouldn't be expected to do a deep biomechanical exam, but you could easily ask that athlete, if they're safe and they're ready enough, to do things like, let me see you hop on one leg. Let me see you hop on one leg five times moving forward, or let me see you hop on one leg for 10 seconds moving side to side. Let me see you hop on one leg as high as you can, for example. Or let me see you throw the ball. Let me see you spike the ball. Well, what does that look like compared to what you used to do? If it looks like you're grimacing or it looks like you're altering your technique or you can't hit it as hard, you know, whatever the sport may be, I think it's incumbent upon the coaches and the parents also to say, hey, we have a little yellow flag here. This athlete might be ready to practice, but I'm not sure if they're ready for the intensity of full-level competition yet. Let's get them checked by a professional. You know, they can call us at Peak Performance. Our number is 218-0240, and they can give us a call. They can see their athletic trainer at school. But somebody who's skilled should look at them to make sure that they're really, really ready.
And Mike, I think that's, you know, a valid, you know, concern. And I know as a coach, you know, I'm certainly not trained to do the things that you are trained as a physical therapist and beyond. But I think that, you know, maybe in our next show or an upcoming show, we can talk a little bit more about evaluation and how you can help these athletes, but also help the coaches. I mean, we've talked about this before, to get the coaches more and more involved and to understand what's going on, both biomechanically and also from an evaluation standpoint, which I think would be wonderful. Hey, Mike, it's been fun as always. And, you know, for our listeners, make sure you check out Peak Performance and see Mike. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to help you. And Mike, thanks a lot. And, you know, we'll see you again next week.
We'll see you next week, Greg.
When we come back, I'll have another view from my dugout.
One man come in the name of love. Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home, where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Little League is committed to the safety of its players, so background checks are mandatory for all volunteers. And that's why every local league gets 125 free national criminal background checks. Little League rules for a reason. For more info, go to littleleague.org.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
This day cannot pass, even on Youth Sports Now, without remembering the tragic events of September 11th, just 12 years ago. As adults, we will always remember where we were and what we were doing at the moment that our world was shattered by terrorists. When I worked in New York City, I passed through the World Trade Center every day, changing subway trains. I went to college with one of those killed who worked at Cantor Fitzgerald in Tower 2. It took me over 14 hours to reach my lifelong friend who was working in his office one block away from Ground Zero. Today, any youth athlete under age 12 only knows of these events via a history book and the multitude of documentaries that are airing this week. But it's important that we remember, that we tell them what happened and how it affected us and our nation. I was watching one of those documentaries this week, and what struck me was the fact that for many, including me, sports played a major role in the healing process. There's a great line from the movie Field of Dreams when the booming voice of James Earl Jones says to Kevin Costner, that through it all, there remained one constant, baseball. And after 9/11, the one constant that let people escape and momentarily be distracted was sports. Anyone who knows me understands that there is no team in any sport that I despise more than the New York Yankees. But in the midst of the tragedy, when they played that first game, we were not Yankee fans or Red Sox fans, we were Americans. All around the sports world, from the lowest of low amateur leagues to professional sports teams and leagues, they remembered those who lost their lives innocently by just going to work that day. While sports did not bring back loved ones, rebuild buildings, or take the pain away, sports provided what we needed, a sense of normalcy in the midst of chaos. Let's never forget. Let's hug our children a bit tighter tonight. Let's let them be kids and laugh and play on the fields, courts, and ice rinks all across the land. And through it, let there be one thing that gives us an escape, the one constant, sports. That's my view from the dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, Extreme Sight Performance Clinic, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.